is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Well, the Oregon State Legislature had a special session last week. We're spending time today getting thoughts and sort of a look back at the session. This time around, talking to State Representative Cedric Hayden. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to get on and share with folks what we have been doing up in Salem.
So let's take a kind of an overall brush, broad brushstroke approach first of all. What were your thoughts overall about the session?
So the session moved through pretty quickly, pretty much on pace. There was a couple of discussion points. The House actually called their session, or their House floor, the floor where we go and vote on all 3 days. The Senate took a more, in my opinion, efficient approach, and they basically called, they called themselves into the special session, but then they just stacked all the bills up on Friday. In the House, we did five bills on Thursday and eight bills, if I have that count right, on Friday. And everything moved through pretty smoothly. There wasn't a lot of surprises, although it was a very different session because only the presiding officer, Speaker of the House, and President of the Senate, President Courtney, and Speaker Kotek were the only ones that could produce and introduce bodies of legislation or legislative concepts. And then those came under their names, or they could allow other people. So the only option that we had was very limited to try and get some amendments in there. So it was it was a bit one-sided, but for the most part, everything went pretty smoothly.
So do you feel like the Republicans were heard during the special session?
Well, we would have liked to had more input. We would have liked to introduce some of our own bills. I know that multiple members of my caucus and the Republican side on the Senate too introduced amendments that weren't adopted. But we could sign up and we could have those amendments heard, meaning that we could get permission to go before their committee. The way they set this up, 16 members started meeting on Monday, Tuesday, and then the governor convened the session on Wednesday, where all 90 members came up there. It was interesting. We checked in. The other 74 of us checked in Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. and had absolutely nothing to do other than study bills. And we didn't even have the bills at that point. They were still in legislative concept forms, meaning that they could change all day Wednesday until 6 p.m. And then we adjourned. I actually took the opportunity to go buy a new chainsaw. A lot of time there. And then on Thursday, we did have a couple of bills that we voted on. But like I said, the Senate took the other approach. They just said, we'll stack them all up on Friday and do them Friday. And they did. And that seemed a little more efficient than the way we did it.
So talk more about some of the legislation that was passed, maybe first of all, in the area of police reform.
Okay, so police reform, we talked about this last week, and there wasn't a lot of change to that. And so there was one bill, I don't remember the number right off the top of my head and didn't write it down in my notes here, but the arbitration bill was one of the big pieces of police reform. Now, this has passed the Senate, I believe, three or four times within the amount of time that I've been at the legislature unanimously, but it has never been able to get through the House. And what this is when a police chief or a body that has been assigned to do some sort of corrective action with a law enforcement personnel, if there is some interaction that they find needs some corrective action, they go ahead and do that, or maybe the advisory council does that, or internal affairs does that. And then it ends up going to arbitration, where basically the unions come in and negotiate that, and it ends up changing the record to the frustration of some of some of our police officers, law enforcement, to where that individual, if you do have a rare, and I want to stress the word rare instance of a individual in law enforcement that has, you know, these things added up, I compared it to last week here to the healthcare industry, where we have our boards that are kind of separate from the state. They're separate from you know, our associations. And in the medical field, you have the opportunity for people to voice a concern, have that reviewed, and then goes into a database. And so they looked at this from the arbitration bill to, they put more strength behind the corrective action side than the arbitration coming in and washing that off the record. So that passed, I believe, unanimously in the Senate again for like a fourth or fifth time. And I believe it passed unanimously in the House also. I don't think there was any no votes on it. So that was the big discussion. And then we had talked last week about the other factors that they're going to do, talking about sound guns or no noise to control crowds, or the use of tear gas versus pepper spray to control crowds. Those types of items basically got packaged up during somewhere around Thursday. There was discussion. I wasn't in the room, but there was discussion on the tear gas of, well, you know, and this was from the side that was proposing to have a complete ban on tear gas. One of the police precincts got basically attacked, for lack of a better word, in Portland while we were going through this session. And the discussion came up from those that were wanting a total ban on tear gas, saying, well, wait a minute, if the police don't have these tools, these non-lethal tools, what's their next step? A baton, you know, a stun gun, or eventually lethal force. And so that got kicked to a task force, so this could be really discussed when it is appropriate, because I strongly believe there's instances that it would be appropriate to use these non-lethal ways to, you know, control riots or control things that they get out of, you know, get out of hand. If it becomes unsafe to the public, the police force needs these things. And I think there came into an understanding that, yes, we don't want to make a situation worse by moving this through so quickly. So most of these other items went to task force and workforces, and I think that's a good way to approach it.
So is there a timeline for those task forces and other groups? When are they supposed to report back or present some legislation?
Yeah, and so pretty quickly, ideally, and this is very quick, although I am on three task force now. Matter of fact, this morning I was on the child care one that deals with the reimbursement rates for rural child care, which is 50 cents on the dollar compared to metropolitan. I have been successful in getting it from 33 cents up to 50 cents, so a little gain there. This is kind of my six-year saga to get to some pay equity for our rural child care folks. So that's an example of what a task force is. We're meeting every 2 weeks for 3 hours as we go through that task force. We met this morning. And so very compressed time frames with COVID on other task force. So these task force are supposed to have a report by the end of the year to have some legislation, hopefully consensus legislation, that our police officers can have the tools that are available to them to keep the rest of the public safe and to keep themselves safe for the 2021 session.
So it sounds like we didn't have some of the things that maybe we've heard about in other cases in terms of defunding police, that kind of terminology.
You know, I was there the whole time from the opening bell to the closing bell, and I never heard once on the floor, and you know, anything's possible, I could have missed it, or in the hallways, any discussion about defunding police. That was, you know, I got to say that was, of course, we weren't doing budgets. So when we come back in late July, early August for the budgets part, you know, we will Definitely want to make sure that we do everything we can to secure funding for our public safety officers. But there is going to be a push on all budgets. But there was not legislation like we're seeing nationally and, you know, in California and, you know, many other states where there, you know, big outcry to defund the police. That was not the that wasn't something that was brought forward and wasn't something that discussed. And, you know, I think they realized that we would have put up a big fight on that. So that wasn't something that could come as consensus legislation and have bipartisan support on it.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More with State Representative Cedric Hayden when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, News Radio 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson Show coming at 1. On tomorrow's program, Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools, his first year complete as superintendent in the district. And we're going to talk about how that first year went, probably unlike what he had foreseen when he accepted the job, as so many things have changed in education over the last few months. So we'll get kind of a one-year check-in with Superintendent Jared Corden tomorrow. Talking to State Representative Cedric Hayden this afternoon about the special session in the Oregon State Legislature, along with police reform, COVID-19 response, dealing with some of the governor's executive orders, talk about codifying them into statute, things like that. What ended up happening in that regard during the special session?
So there was three main bills that broke that out. And the main omnibus bill that we had talked about, and it was 4212. And it's going to really oversimplify this. There were some good things in that bill, but it was basically a bill that makes the governor's executive orders legal. And I am oversimplifying that, but It was a bill that took away any question of whether her executive orders were following Oregon's Constitution under a pandemic. Now, I ended up not supporting that bill because I think it went too far on removing quorums and our process, where, you know, if you just look at this session, even though most things were consensus, we had something that I thought was interesting as just for example, a cell phone tax bill. I'm like, okay, are we going to, in the future, during a pandemic or during some natural disaster, be able to increase taxes now that we have a precedent set on this cell phone tax that we did under COVID, and then codify under 4212 that we wouldn't have to have a quorum there? So it just went too far for me. There were some things in there that I could have supported if it weren't, you know, getting rid of some of the process that we believe, or I believe, is there to protect the public. And so on the big omnibus bill, I didn't support that one. So there was that bill that was controversial. The cell phone tax, I think that passed almost completely on party lines. And then they did get to not complete consensus, but the eviction moratorium and the foreclosure moratorium were things that she was codifying in separate bills, just in case. I assume she didn't wrap those together so they could run those separately in case they didn't all pass. So those four bills were mostly dealing with her executive orders.
So what was the level of Republican support for those proposals?
So it varied. There was, again, I think the least Republican support was on the cell phone tax bill, and I don't have the record up in front of me, but I think there was very, very few Republican votes on that, if any, on the House side. And then the foreclosure bill, I think that broke down to a handful of Republican votes and stronger opposition than support on the Republican side in the House. The eviction moratorium was stronger support on both the, 100% on the Democrat side and stronger support on the Republican side than opposed to it. And the 42-12, I think, broke about even on Republican votes versus supporting or opposed to it. And so, there was, when you take some significant legislation like the 42-12, which had a whole bunch of stuff, you might say, hey, I like 7 out of 8 things in that bill, but can I really vote for the 8th one that I don't support? So those are the positions that all lawmakers are put in when they have the combination of these bills. But there wasn't big floor fights on any of them.
What about the structure of the session? Talk about what that was like being in the House.
So it was a little interesting because there was only 3 members in the House that were involved in the committee. So they had, this was the first special session of 2020, and we are expecting a second one, like you said, probably the first week of August, maybe even late in July, but coming up fairly soon to deal with budgets. And it was almost eerily quiet for the rest of us, because we're there 10, 12 hours a day and just watching, right? We're just watching this play out in our screens. We were in our rooms. We weren't sequestered to our rooms. They did allow 20 people on the House floor at a time, so we kind of rotated through that, or we could be in our room, and then the floor they expanded to where normally the public in the galleries, the side aisles, these are just places that are intended for the public to come sit. They expanded our floor into that, so there would be more spacing. They did require a mask or a face shield while you were on the floor, or you could stay in your room and then just come down and do a thumbs up. And, from what I saw, I think there was 100% compliance with doing either a face shield or a mask out of courtesy to the process, and didn't have a big controversy over that.
Now, there were people going in from journalism and from other areas that weren't sure this structure of the legislature met Oregon public meetings laws, law requirements. What do you think?
Well, I think now that 42-12 has passed, now it has met it, but that was the argument to vote against it. There were a couple of reporters that were allowed in there, but if you walked around from where we come in the parking lot to the front, you've got those big round, I don't know if they're steel or what they're made out of. But the Capitol is just locked up. And I get the whole pandemic and safety situation. But were the legislation that we did so important that we did it now versus when the public could have input? So, I continue to be concerned about the legislation that we did pass that allows the government to work not to the full capacity of public input that I would like to see.
Now, you mentioned the next session to take a look at the budget shortfalls, et cetera, late July, early August. Has much information come out about that?
No, very little. We were gearing up for that till about a couple of weeks ago now, or about 10 days before this. Really wasn't any much budget discussion. That said, there was a budget bill, a 5,000 bill, and for people that are really in the weeds on politics, it was interesting. I was actually able to sponsor a budget bill, which normally you wouldn't be allowed to do, just the way that they had that set up with these coming through Kotek or Peter Courtney. But we did have one budget bill, and that was for some funding for fire season that I supported, some funding for foster kids under the Oregon Promise. When these foster kids get a little bit older or out of state, they still have access to some education, and that's something I've been working on for a couple of sessions. Another good thing that did pass, which I was a sponsor on, was the, and again, when you're a sponsor, that doesn't mean you get to drop the bill, but you can be on the bill. The forestry MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, kind of between the environmental folks and the natural resources folks as a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee. I did sponsor that forestry MOU, and we got that passed. And so what that means is that the folks that are always wanting to change the Forest Practice Act and bringing lawsuits have agreed to lay down their lawsuits and negotiate with the forestry industry in the future.
All right, State Representative Cedric Caden, we'll look ahead to the next special session. Thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Kyle. I always appreciate it. Have a good afternoon.
1257 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.